And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. Have you noticed, maybe it's just me, that it's starting to feel like the weekend is almost here? I know it's Thursday, but tomorrow being Good Friday, there are a lot of folks who will be off their regular schedule tomorrow. There'll be special services and churches all over leading up to Easter weekend, of course. So, yeah, especially now that we're into the afternoon, we're kind of getting that end-of-the-week feel already, even though it's Thursday. I am so happy that it's Thursday because I have guests today that I am really, really, really anxious to talk to. Let me tell you, first of all, coming up later on the show today, George Pry is going to be here, George Pry and Judy Novak. They're going to give us information on a program called Honor Flight, Pittsburgh. And I'm not sure, this may be regional. Maybe it happens in other parts of the country. I'm not sure. The basic deal is they take veterans from our area, war veterans, to Washington, D.C. to visit the memorials if they've never had a chance to do so. They take them by bus. World War II, Korea, Vietnam, especially World War II, because, you know, those guys, the precious few that we have left, are in their 90s now. So we'll get all the details from George and Judy. They'll be with us a little bit later on the program today. But our first guest sits across the console from me right now. Pauly Shaw is here to talk about several things, foremost of which will be a book that she's just written and has just published on Moraine State Park. Pauly Shaw, hello, for the first time in, like, I don't know, 20 years that we've said hi to each other.
Indeed, it has been a long time.
Maybe longer than that. I'm not really sure.
It's very nice to be here at WISR, where, in fact, I grew up.
That's right. It's kind of funny because it must have been yesterday, maybe whatever, earlier this week, I was promoting the fact that you were going to be here. And my email lit up here from a listener who said, "Do you know who Pauly Shaw's mom was?" And I kind of chuckled because, of course, I did. Your mom was Margot Pitts.
Yes.
My one of my mentors and a dear, dear friend. Yes, I know who Pauly's mom was. And that's actually how we came to meet. We are not friends. We're passing acquaintances. We may have said hi to each other in the hallway two or three times back when your mom was still working at WISR.
Yes.
Even after she became a professor at Butler County Community College, she still did a one day a week show here on WISR in the afternoon. And we may have been ships passing in the night at some point. Well, I want to talk about, if it's okay, a little bit later on the program. We have plenty of time to chat here. Just a relaxing chat at lunchtime. I want to talk about your mom a little bit. I want to talk about some other things with you as well. But first and foremost, this beautiful, beautiful book that you've published on Moraine State Park. There are, I didn't count them, I was telling the listeners yesterday, there's got to be at least a couple of hundred beautiful color pictures in here.
Many color pictures for sure.
Yeah.
96-page book.
This is only recently published.
March 20th.
Even though there was an article in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that beat the publishing date. I'm not quite sure why Bob Batts published it so soon, but it was fun to read. In fact, I saw his article, this was back in the middle of March, and I said, wait a minute, because I had the review copy in my hand, but I knew it wasn't published yet, so I hadn't even contacted you to schedule an interview. I said, what's he doing, publishing this already? But it was a nice article, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So how did this all come about? How did you end up writing for Arcadia Publishers, a book about Moraine State Park, Pauly Shaw?
In the summer of 2015, Arcadia Publishing contacted Dustin Drew, who is the park manager of Moraine State Park. Arcadia specializes in regional histories, local histories, but they cover the entire nation. They wanted to know if someone could be found locally who could take charge of producing this kind of book. So he went first to the support groups, the 3MJC and the Marine Preservation Fund. And people thought, that's a great idea, but yet nobody apparently stepped up. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a volunteer at McConnell's Mill. McConnell's Mill and Moraine are a complex. We share the same administration, rangers, everything.
And they are almost connecting. I'm not sure whether they actually do connect.
Almost. That was the plan. Originally, they wanted to, but at that part was never realized.
Jennings is connected to Moraine.
At the other end.
Yeah, but McConnell's Mill doesn't quite hook up.
Almost. Mm-hmm. Almost. But I heard about this at the Heritage Festival, and I thought, that's an interesting thing. I could do that. So I went over and talked to Dustin Drew, the park manager. He showed me what he had from the publisher. We shook hands. That launched it. Hmm. I contacted the acquisitions editor, and she guided me through the extensive application process.
Before I forget, is this book available in bookstores, online?
Yes.
Can they find it in libraries? Do you know where it is yet? It's just out for a couple of weeks now.
It just March 20th. Yeah. Yes, it's in the Butler Library. I placed a number of books in local libraries at the community college, mm-hmm. in the Butler Library, in the Slippery Rock Library, the Grove City Library, Newcastle Library, Elwood City Library, Cranberry Library, different places. Yes, it's definitely available in the libraries. It's available at Nicolette's Gift Shop, which is in Portersville. Mm-hmm. She is very close to Moraine State Park. It's available at Costco. Mm-hmm. I'll be doing a book signing there coming up next weekend. Not this weekend, but in a week from 11 to 1. It's available at Barnes & Noble in Cranberry. Mm-hmm. I'll be doing a book signing there on May 20th.
I'm lucky to get a hold of you. You're pretty busy these days.
It's available at Bear Run Campground. It's available, or it will be soon, at the Owlet Gift Shop, which is operated by the Moraine Preservation Fund, which is physically in Moraine State Park, mm-hmm. right there where you ride the Nautilus Nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, down on what is
they
it?
Haven't
McDaniels
opened
Launch,
yet.
Is that what that is?
McDaniels.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They haven't opened for the season, but I happen to know that they have books ready for when they open. Mm-hmm. It's also to be available at Jennings.
Okay.
I know they placed an order. Whether they have physically shown up in the shop yet, I'm not sure. Also, Super Styles in Harmony. I know that she has it because she's one of my biggest fans. And so she has it too. Plus, you can buy it online from Arcadia Publishing. You can also buy it at Target.com and Amazon.com.
Excellent. Wow.
Kind of cool to find my name there on Amazon.
Yeah. I've seen some other Arcadia publications, generally of municipalities here and there, but this book has a totally different look to it.
It does.
Their other ones have kind of a, I don't know, it's
black
a standard.
And white.
Yeah, it's a standard cover. And, I mean, you really have to look to make sure you're getting the book that you want because they all look the same. This, in fact, has a beautiful color print on the front of Sailboat at Moraine.
They have a very large series called Images of America. And you're right, they're black and white or a tintype sort of.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of a
coloring
sepia thing. Yeah.
And they are, there are several on Butler, postcards about Butler, many about local areas. Mm-hmm. But this is a very recent series. This is Images of Modern America. It does have some black and white photos, but most of them are color. Now, the picture on the cover is a vintage picture. I had a modern one that I wanted, but they want vintage picture. That's from 1970. Now, vintage is 1970 in terms of Moraine State Park, mm-hmm. which opened in 1970.
Well, you know, now that I look at it, and I didn't realize this before, but I can tell from the shoreline in the background that this is still when the park was in its infancy because
yes.
there are clearings there. It looks like the water level might not quite be up to where it was going to be as they were filling Lake Arthur. And I would not have realized that until you mentioned it, but that's kind of neat. I like the idea because, heck, you could go out there yourself with your camera and take pictures nowadays, but where are you going to get vintage pictures like this?
And on the back, you'll also see a vintage picture that shows the South Shore swimming area.
That's the big picture at the top on the back?
That's the big picture at the top. Now, there are people who comment that the park isn't used as much today, they think, because they remember how crowded that beach was. When the park opened, there was only one beach opened, the South Shore Beach. The North Shore, the Lakeview Beach, wasn't open until several years later. Mm-hmm. That was put in 1973 for the Boy Scout Jamboree. In fact, they put several beaches on the North Shore, but only the one sandy beach remains. So instead of having everybody at one beach, now you've got them separated by two beaches, and there's been a lot more development. Mm-hmm. The park is very large, so you can have a lot of people there, and you really don't see each other.
It's a good point, because the two swimming beaches that are there now are on opposite sides of the lake.
Yes.
And you can't even see one from the other. So, when the park first opened, it would have looked a lot more crowded on that solitary beach. Plus, I can remember on warm Saturdays or Sundays in the summer, in the early days, or at least several years into the history of Moraine State Park, they used to shut off the entrance after so many people got in there.
I do remember that, everybody was going to South Shore.
It's the only place you could go to swim.
That was the developed place. But now that there's so much on the North Shore, there's swimming, the two marinas, picnic shelters, mm-hmm. the disc golf. There's a lot going on the North Shore, so you don't even access it from the South Shore. You have to access it from the other side. With some state parks, there's one road that encircles the entire park. Moraine is different. We're the third largest state park within Pennsylvania, and it doesn't have one road that goes around. There's 42 miles just of shoreline. So you come in from different roads. So people on the North Shore don't really see except across the lake.
You can look across the lake and see the Bear Run boat launch area from the North Shore, mm-hmm. but otherwise you would have no idea how large that that lake is. In fact, I once flew over it when I was flying to Boston, and the air traffic pattern that day, when you took off from Pittsburgh International, you take off, you go over the nuclear plant at Shippenport, you hang a big right turn headed to Boston, and you fly right over Moraine State Park. And I looked, in fact, I have some fantastic pictures that I shot out the window of the plane. And that really gives you an idea of the size of Lake Arthur. Much, much bigger than you realize from any point on shore.
3,225 acres.
We're talking with Polly Shaw. If you're joining us a little bit late, Polly is from the Portersville area, right? Portersville area. And she has written a marvelous, I'm not exaggerating when I use that that adjective, a marvelous history of Moraine State Park, a pictorial history, but with quite a bit of text. I hesitate to even say captions of pictures, because they're really paragraphs, extended captions with a lot of text in there. Did you write all of those yourself?
I wrote everything that's in there.
Everything, huh?
There is a very standard format to which I had to adhere for the publisher's work in this series. I could have an introduction that was not more than, say, 2 pages. Then each chapter, and I could have between 4 and 7 chapters. I ended up with 5. But I could have an introduction, but I was limited to how much I could put in that introduction. So in laying out my story, I had to figure out what I wanted to get in the introduction for that particular chapter, and the rest of the story is carried through the captions. There's no more narrative later on in the chapter.
That would actually be harder, I think, if I've never written a book, that would be more difficult to say what you wanted to say in that strict format, as opposed to just saying, okay, write 50 pages. That would be a piece of cake, really.
That was their format, and I was limited into how many words I could put in the caption. So sometimes that's one picture with a longer caption, or there may be two pictures that share a caption, or there could be two or even three pictures that each have a caption.
Where'd you get all the photographs, by the way? They're marvelous.
I was so fortunate because I have the long-standing relationship with the park, mm-hmm. being 20 years at the mill. They very kindly opened up the archives for me. There are several thousand slides. Almost all of the picture records from the development in the park are on slides. So then I had to get a slide viewer. Mm-hmm. I've acquired a lot of things in conjunction with this. But I got a slide viewer. The slides are not particularly organized. They were labeled. But you couldn't go to it and say, here are the pictures for this idea, or there are the pictures for that. That's going to be coming. We're now working on getting those organized and cataloged so that actually anybody in the state park system would be able to call up pictures. But that hasn't been done yet. Mm-hmm. I had to do it by going through slide by slide. So we have many pictures of men walking across the grass. This is going to be such and such in the future. Well, you really can't fill a book with those kind of pictures.
No, that would get boring real fast.
But I was very fortunate that they documented the building of the dam. So, and that's, I have a few of those in the book. Mm-hmm. So you can see where they had to reroute Muddy Creek, where they built part of the dam, where they then shifted the water to go through the sluice gate so that they could, and build a cofferdam to keep the water to half the channel so they could build the rest of the dam.
You know, a lot of folks don't even know where the dam is that created Lake Arthur, which, and it, actually, it's not hard to believe because it's almost hidden from view. It's not really visible from any... You can't see it from 422 when you're flying by.
Out of the sight.
It's not very far from 422.
No, it's not, very close.
Not very far from the McDaniels launch at the North Shore. It's very, in fact, you can walk. I have.
Yes.
From McDaniels launch to the dam. But a lot of people don't have no idea where it is. Yeah. Well, and you have a picture in here. I was thumbing through my review copy, and it was one of the first things I saw. It's the building of this particular one is I-79 and 422. 422, of course, the original Route 422, went from Butler to Newcastle, as it still does, but it would have been underwater because the location of the original highway is now where the lake is.
Now, that's a very interesting point. When they got the idea, let's recreate this glacial lake. Well, you have to decide, after they got approval for the project, where will the dam go? The dam, there were four locations considered. One of them was right at Isle, which would have been on 528.
This is a little town, village, hamlet,
town,
by the
village,
way.
Yes.
Isle, yeah, this village of Isle.
That would be at the confluence of Shannon Run and Swamp Run, where they flow into Muddy Creek. That would have made a fairly small lake. They also had one further down, closer to Big Run, we'll say halfway down. Mm-hmm. That would have made a larger lake. Or they considered one at Portersville Station. That's from the old Western Allegheny Railroad, which 9 miles of that old railroad right-of-way runs right under the lake. They considered that place. That would have made the largest lake. So they had to first decide that. Then they thought they would put it at Portersville Station. Unfortunately, the ground wasn't right. They thought that perhaps there was too much limestone. Mm-hmm. Limestone tends to fracture. It makes caves. You can't really build a successful dam on that. So that place was out. Then they ended up with where it is right now, which does have limestone, but it's also covered by clay. The clay is a deposit from the glacial lake, mm-hmm. that was here 20,000 years ago.
But this is just... this is so fascinating. I'm so glad I was able to hook up with you and talk about this. I'm so glad that you've written this book. Listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late, that's fine. No problem. Dave Malarkey is my name. Pauly Shaw is with us, author of Moraine State Park, part of the Images of Modern America series published by Arcadia, and just published a little over three weeks ago. But it is available already in stores and online. The you can't talk about Moraine State Park without talking about how it came about. I mean, this is a wonderful thing. It's a huge, as you mentioned, I didn't realize it was the third largest state park in the state of Pennsylvania.
Yes,
it's
it is.
It's really big. So, but most of this land, virtually 99% of it, was privately owned, right? So it had to be purchased or acquired or...
It was acquired.
Somehow. And wasn't that the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy that got involved in that?
When they first... Formally, we're talking about this idea with Dr. Frank Preston.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Frank Preston, John Eisler of Butler, Otto Jennings, and some other people, they said, this is a good idea. And then reality sort of hits. How are we going to acquire this land? There were several groups, and they realized that one group needed to be formed that could acquire the land. That led to the founding of the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy, which was formally changed to that name in 1951. So then they could begin to see about acquiring land. Dr. Frank Preston himself donated a large tract of land. He also bought other tracts of land, which he gave. They hired a land agent who then went around talking with people. And the stories I read that a farmer would say, no, I'm not going to sell you. I need that. That's part of my pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy looked at him and said, look, your cows were stuck in the mud down there last spring. He was a local man. He knew.
Yeah.
So he was able to work with people and to help to acquire all that land, which was necessary to eventually put together the park. Now, yes, it's certainly absolutely true. Some people not happy about this. But a lot of them retired, moved to Florida, moved elsewhere, houses were moved. And that brings us back to why the highway was moved.
Mm-hmm.
When I mentioned that there were different places, if the dam had been placed on the eastern end, they would not have had to move 422. But they went for the bigger lake. And 422 came right in by Big Run, went what would be the middle of the lake now, and headed on west. So that had to be removed. Now, the thing here, that three-lane 422 had just been put in 10 years before.
Wow, I never knew that.
So would the state agree to move a highway that's only 10 years old? But it had a problem. Fog. Horrible, horrible fog.
Because of what was just a creek, Muddy Creek at that
because
time.
Because it ran parallel to the creek in mm-hmm. a lowland. I have read it would take 2 hours to go from Butler to Newcastle because of the fog.
Hmm.
But that's not the only road that was a problem. Interstate 79 had not yet been built, but it had been planned. And the route planned for 79 would have taken it through the lake. So they had to get approval to move a 6-mile stretch of 422 and move it south above the lake level, and they had to get approval to move 79 further west so that it skirts the lake but does not go through it.
You have a marvelous picture in here of when they were just doing the earth moving to put 422, you know, the limited access 4-lane highway that it now is, in there, and there's no pavement, there's no nothing, it's just these huge piles of dirt that they were moving to build that highway. I've been told by people who lived here at that time, I did not, that as they started to fill the lake, you know, they finished the dam, closed the sluice gates, and okay, now slowly we're filling Lake Arthur, that you could drive on the old Route 422, you could drive right down to the edge of the water, and then the pavement just disappeared under the water, and you could come back a week later, and you couldn't go down that far because, you know, the water was higher by then.
When I showed those pictures to Dustin Drew, our current park manager, he was astounded that could have been allowed back in 1969 and 70.
I've talked to friends of mine who were kids then, who said they did it. I mean, that was like a Friday night date. You
yes.
The car, and you drive as far as you could on 422 right down to the edge of the water.
Coming in from both ways.
Yeah.
Coming
yeah.
in from west, coming in from east. They would drive first right through the water, and then they'd have to stop. And it was quite a thing for boats to go over the surface of the water while the cars were all sitting there. You would not get to do that today.
When Frank Preston, what a genius, by the way, and what, you know,
yes.
and what a legacy he leaves for us who remain here in Butler County, including most recently through the generosity of his late wife, Jane, Preston Park in Butler Township.
Beautiful place.
Which is now a huge, huge municipal park. It was their homestead. I mean, they lived in the middle of that, and his workshops and everything were in there, right?
He originally had bought this large tract of land on what was called Whippoorwill Hill Road. It's called Chrisley Road. This was before he married.
Mm-hmm.
He loved that. It overlooked Isle, which is at 528, where the big bridge is. He wanted to build a homestead then. But World War II, this is not the time to be building houses. Then he marries in 1943 or 4. He marries, and he tells his wife, I've got this land. I'd like to build this house. And no, 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 because there were oil wells, there were coal mines, and she found the country to be too rough. This was not a place that she wanted to live. She had come up, a city girl from mm-hmm. Ohio. No, she didn't want to live there. Well, he had already started Preston Laboratories. It was first in East Butler, on the East Butler Road. Then he moved to Meridian. They had a caretaker at the place in Meridian. They were still living in an apartment on McCain Street, I believe, downtown Butler. And that's when he was wanting to build this house, and she says no. But the caretaker, who was a good friend, sadly passed away. So they thought, okay, well, I really don't want to build that house out there. And now we have an apartment at Preston Park, what we call it today. So that's how they came to live there. So when you go to Preston Park, you may expect to see a lovely home. And in fact, he does have a lovely set of gates. That's his English background.
Mm-hmm.
He has this lovely set of gates, but they never actually built a home. They used the caretaker's apartment, which was on the second floor. So you can go and visit the laboratories. They're still very rough. It was only 5-6 years ago that this property was acquired.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure of that date. Not too long ago, acquired by Butler Township. So don't go there expecting to see rooms the way they had them and the laboratories the way they had them. Maybe they'll get to that part someday, but not yet. But the grounds are why you go.
Fascinating couple, actually. Jane Preston, I never talked to Dr. Frank Preston, but his widow, Jane, was a regular listener to this program. And on occasion, she would call me up and set me straight on this issue or another. And we became, you know, pretty good friends because of that. I never got to sit down and talk with her about, you know, the incredible history. Dr. Frank Preston, his work at Preston Labs and so on and so forth, that eventually evolved into what we now know as AGR, right?
Yes.
American Glass Research. Out on Route 68. Well, another story, but you know, I can refer to him, and I don't think this is a stretch. He had the same philosophy as somebody like Bill Gates. He was a brilliant man, a wealthy man, and yet very philanthropic. Donated land, donated money, came up with these ideas of let's recreate this glacial lake. I mean, my gosh, what a dreamer! But he did it.
He was the right man in the right place at the right time. But I think part of that came from his background. He grew up in Leicester, England.
I didn't know he was English. No.
Yes.
Huh.
Definitely born in England. And about 1896 or so, he attended school, Wiggiston Boys School. For those of you who are park enthusiasts, you may recognize the name Wiggiston Trail, which is near the region office, and also goes up on Whippoorwill Hill, which is the ground that he owned. But he named that trail after his boys' school. He was there starting at age 12 or 11, and World War I was coming in, the Great War.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his classmates and other boys in the school went on to serve in that war. Two of the masters, the teachers from the school, served in the war. Many of them were lost. So after the war, Frank and his classmates decided that it would be appropriate if they would dedicate themselves toward public service, toward giving back, do it twice as much to make up for what their classmates who had fallen would never be able to do.
Wow.
So I have read his book, Boys of the Old Brigade, which refers back to his time at school, but it's his personal journals. They are, and anybody can read it, but there's only one copy that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
It is bound. It's in the section of the Butler Library, the kind of section where you have to use hand sanitizer, mm-hmm. and you will sit here at the table.
Mm-hmm.
They are definitely in special collections.
Why don't you tell that story? I'm sure you've seen the film Goodbye, Mr. Chips. Do you know that wonderful film where the boys' school in England, and some of them go off to war and are killed, and... It's a great flick, by the way.
Yes.
So how did Frank Preston end up emigrating to America?
When he was in college, and he has, as we know, a doctorate, and he holds master's and several degrees, he started working for a glass company in England. That glass company must have been working with somebody in America and sent Frank, at age 22, to a company here mm-hmm. in I think it was New York State. He worked there for a while, and then he went to Franklin Glass, again still working for his employer mm-hmm. in England, but he's now assigned to Franklin Glass because he had some special skills, special techniques. So that's how he came to Butler.
Hmm.
He was working for Franklin Glass.
Which, folks, if you're not from around here or haven't lived here all that long, was a huge glass factory on the outskirts of Butler, which burned down, 30 years ago or something
like that.
But
it was a huge business.
Yeah.
He never intended to stay. He was just, I'm an Englishman, and I'm here, and I'm doing this work. He really didn't find close friends here. He was interested in birds. Ornithology was a lifelong hobby of his. He was interested in nature. He was interested in geology. But he had acquaintances. And one summer night, 1922, a friend from work said, "It's a hot day. Let's take a drive to Slippery Rock. Let's get some ice cream." Now, Frank didn't have a car, so even getting to ride in a car to go for ice cream was pretty nice. So they're heading up what we today would call Route 8 North, and they're passing through Muddy Creek Flats.
Mm-hmm.
He recognizes the landscape. Those of you who are very local and have traveled up there know that you come down a big hill, there is 0.7 of a mile of totally flat land, and then you go back up again. He recognized that as the basin of a glacial lake, because Leicester, England, is likewise located on the basin of a glacial lake. In that case, and it was the same glacier we had, the same glacial period, that backed up the River Dart. Ours backed up Muddy Creek. So he recognized this. On a different outing, he went with friends. Now they're at McConnell's Mill. He recognized where Alpha Pass would be, where this glacial lake would have released the water.
And created the Slippery Rock Creek Gorge.
Yes.
Wow.
So this is, and that glacial lake, 70 feet higher and 8 miles longer than today's Lake Arthur.
So all of this because he decided he was going to go with a friend to get ice cream.
Yes.
And from that incredible piece of luck, he came up with the idea of recreating this glacial lake, which became for us Lake Arthur Moraine State Park. Wow.
He put it in the back of his head. Again, he wasn't going to stay here. He was going to go back to England. But he did go back to England in 1925, received his doctorate degree, took a year's world tour, came back here to Butler, and decided to open his own business. He was not a manufacturing, he was research. Mm-hmm. So now he's 1927-8, he's got a company for 10 years, and he's thinking, I do seem to be staying. So let's build a bigger laboratory, and that's how he moved to Meridian. And then he decides he will acquire his citizenship. He acquired a fiance, and now he's got a very successful business, successful to the point that he can now step back a bit. And that's when he can really return to this early interest. He loved geology. He's made these discoveries, but now they're to the forefront, and he has time. His wife would drive sometimes. She would sit in the car eating apples and reading books while he's out trying to determine the lake edge of the glacial lake. He's mapping all this out. So this was not a whim that he said, oh, let's make a lake. He did a tremendous amount of personal study. He would go into Pittsburgh. He would talk to Otto Jennings. He would talk to others at the Carnegie Museum and at the University of Pittsburgh. Learning. This man was a lifelong learner. I like to think I'm a bit of a lifelong learner, but this man was working at a much higher level than any of us.
These are wonderful stories. I'm enthralled here as I sit listening to Paulie Shaw. We need to take a break. We're going to have to readjust our program a little bit here. Can you stick with us a little bit longer?
Yes,
are you okay
I can.
With that? Our next guest will be here at the bottom of the hour, and that will be George Pry and Judy Novak. But I'm going to keep Polly here simply because I have too many more things to talk to her about. And
including my mother.
Including your mom, yes. We're going to talk about your mom. So let's take a quick break here as we move now, coming up on 7 minutes past one. And it's nice to have you along with us here on It's Your Turn today. And we'll talk more with our guest, our wonderful guest, Polly Shaw, in just a moment or so. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Spring cleaning time. Fun for you? Actually, I kind of get a perverse joy out of doing it every once in a while. Of course, I only do it every 3 years, so maybe that's the deal. Listen, if you're doing spring cleaning or downsizing or moving, please consider donating unwanted items, whether it's clothing, shoes, furniture, household items, whatever, to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in the Greater Butler Mart. Yeah, every single penny that's generated from the operation of that store stays in Butler County to help support their food bank and their client aid program. So, I mean, you know, it's terrific. And besides, what's going to happen to that stuff if you don't donate it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul? Into the landfill. We don't need any more stuff in the landfill, right? They're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. They're in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8, just south of Butler. And it's very, very easy to donate stuff. There's free parking right next to the door. The drop-off bins are right inside. If you got a lot of stuff or big stuff, call them. They'll come and get it. Help them so they can help others. Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart. We'll be back right after this.
Trout fishing is tradition in Pennsylvania. It's the thrill of the catch and spending quality time with family and friends. But most of all, fishing is fun. Get your gear together and visit GoneFishingPA.com today to get your annual or multi-year fishing license and vouchers from the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission. Opening day for trout season is April 15th throughout Pennsylvania. Reel in the memories. Get your fishing license now at GoneFishingPA.com.
If you're tired of being fed to death by the big banks, now is a great time to join the Butler Armco Employees Credit Union. With more free services like checking, online banking, mobile banking, and check deposits by phone, along with the best rates around on autos, home equity loans, and mortgages, you'll quickly see why over 26,000 members have chosen BAECU for their banking needs. It's never been easier to join, so stop in or join online at BAECU.com. You and your wallet will be happy you did. BAECU is federally insured by NCUA and is an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back, folks. Polly Shaw's with us. Polly, I think your next book should be about Frank Preston. You could sit down with a word processor right now and crank out a little brochure on his life.
Actually, my next book will be on McConnell's Mill State Park.
Wonderful.
I'm not to submit a proposal until at least late fall. They like 6 months between the publication of one book before they look at a proposal for a next book. But I've already started to do some research learning new things about McConnell's Mill. I've been there 20 years, and yet there's still so many more things to learn. I know about the building, the hill, the actual historic mill, mm-hmm. but I've been learning about the Polish Falcon Camp. I didn't know about it. I'm learning about it.
I knew that it was a working mill, obviously, with the power of the Slippery Rock Creek going through that gorge there. By the way, Pauly Shaw, you were a teacher. You were elementary
37 school. Years, Seneca Valley School District.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. And now she has a little time to write, and that's good for us. I want to talk about your mom. Your mom was Margot Pitts, the late Margot Pitts. I was very close to your mom. She was one of my mentors when I came out of school and started in this business. She was at WISR then. And as I mentioned earlier, even after she became a professor at Butler County Community College, she still had her hand in radio. I talked to your mom about this. I've talked to others about her. When she started at WISR, she was one of the very few women working in radio.
Very few. Mm-hmm. She started, I believe, in the 1945, 46. I'm not exactly sure what year they moved to Butler, because I wasn't here yet. But she started there doing a woman's program, and somehow that grew into Cheerio. That was the name of her little show. And then she became a regular disc jockey. She has told me that she was the first woman's disc jockey in Western Pennsylvania. So she had a regular show. She also did the news when required. She has told me that actually on May 14th on a certain year, she did the 12 o'clock news, and I was born at 2:25 that same day.
There's also a story. In fact, one of our listeners sent me an email earlier this week when I was promoting the fact that you were going to be on, and said that she remembered Margot's program called Pauly's Playhouse.
Yes.
There has to be a connection there, Pauly, or maybe not. I don't know.
There definitely is. In the late 40s, they did a live program. They had Bob Kaufman, and they had a puppet of some sort, and they had music, and they have school children come to that big back room at the old WISR building at 357 North Main, where I grew up. And they would have these live kids come in, and they would do a program. For several years, this went on. And then when I was forecast, somehow they all thought, well, Pauly's Playhouse, this should be Pauly. And that's how my name came along.
Wow. What a story. What a story. Yeah, at the rear of the old WISR building on Main Street, there was a gargantuan studio.
Yes.
Huge. And it was all soundproofed and everything with double glass and all that stuff looking into the control room. But in the early days of radio, when WISR signed on in 1941, you didn't have records. I mean, most of the music, at least for the early few years, was live. You had live bands in there. Remember, there was a grand piano in there. Remember
there
that?
There was.
Yeah.
But they did also then put in the record shelves.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, on two walls, many, many, many records. And she would have to go and pull her records that she would be putting on for that hour, 2 hours, and then go back, and she had to put them back in. And I remember they had a machine that could cut records.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the back wall. And so it was of an interview or of a live performance, they would cut the record right there.
Yeah, this was before magnetic tape.
Yes.
Which is, of course, not used anymore either. But those were called electronic transcriptions. And they were huge machines. I never used them, but I've seen pictures of them. Well, anyway, fond memories of Margot, and she was of great help to me and very kind to me. And we did some theater shows together, too, because we had a mutual avocational interest in community theater. Well, for me, it was an avocation. For your mom, my goodness, she lived and died for theater.
She loved it. She directed, she performed, she produced, did the publicity.
She was the managing director of the Silver Fox Playhouse up in St. Petersburg.
Yeah? 25 years. Mm-hmm. 25 years, we never went anywhere on a Saturday. Because that was theater night
yeah,
in
yeah.
the summer.
And she was there for every every weekend at Silver Fox. Yeah.
And she had, some of your listeners will remember, she never repeated an outfit. She never repeated the shoes. She would come out like Loretta Young.
She was dressed to the nines.
She was. That's what she did. Yeah. And so she arranged for all of those plays, but she introduced them. She was a personality, and she loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good memories, good memories. When did your mom pass away?
1999.
I couldn't remember. Somebody asked me today. This is, again, the buzz you created about being here. Somebody said, well, when did Margot die? And I said, boy, I don't know off the top of my head.
That date would be coming up, April 30th, 1999.
So that's 17, 18 years ago, something like that?
She was in fairly good health until she developed some severe eye problems and had surgery that did not go well, cataract surgery that failed. They said 1 in 1,000 would fail. She failed. And that led in about 6 months. It was quite a downslope. But I will tell you, because she had failed cataract surgery, my sister and I both have had cataract surgery, and we faced it with a little bit of trepidation.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But that was way back in about 1998 when she had that. Ours was much more recent. My sister and I, no problems.
Mm-hmm.
Very happy to say that.
Well, Margot, your mom, was a, I'm not stretching the point. She was a Renaissance woman. She was a pioneer in terms of her gender in radio. And she was later a professor at, in fact, she was one of the first professors at Butler County Community College. She taught what, psychology?
She taught psychology. She held a master's degree in psychology from Columbia University in New York City. She also taught English. She taught specialized courses for nurses. She also started as a lecturer, became an instructor, associate professor, assistant professor, whichever order those go in, and she retired a full professor. Every time she was eligible for promotion, she achieved it.
And all of this despite being an actor, director, producer, and theater manager in community theater in a variety of Butler Little Theater, Musical Theater Guild, Silver Fox, all over the place.
And being very active with her grandchildren.
Yeah.
She had 5 grandchildren, and definitely with my 2 older nephews, and then mine came along. I have 3 who are now grown, and I'm the grandmother.
Well, I'm glad to talk about your mom for a while. I think about her every once in a while, and I haven't had a chance. I've never had a chance to talk to you about it, because I haven't seen you in who knows how many years. Pauly Shaw is here. When I got, actually, I did not talk to Pauly. I got a book in the mail, and it was, must have been a month and a half ago.
From the publicist.
Arcadia, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I opened it up, and I said, oh, look at this, Moraine State Park. And then I saw your name on the front by Pauly Shaw. So I said, well, there we go. Now, I didn't contact you right away because they had sent it to me in advance to review, and it didn't, you know, it wasn't going to be released until late March. So I wanted to wait until people could actually get a copy of this after we talked about it. The pictures in here are magnificent. Most of them are, by the way, they're all season. They are most of them in color. In fact, I haven't come on a black and white one yet.
Just a very few in the beginning, but they are all season. I made a point to do that.
Yeah, there's summer, winter, the ice boats, the ice fishing on the lake. I haven't seen the ice boats in recent years. I don't know whether they're still out there much or not anymore.
Well, not this winter.
That's true. There weren't even any ice fishermen this year. Well.
But we did. There's a winter fest, a big program in January, February yearly. There is the summer Lake Arthur Regatta. But I was very fortunate with the pictures. Not, the majority do come from the park archives. But I also had pictures from Charlene Reinhart and from John Keck, from Thomas Teft, Margie Opp, Ginny Whipple, and Jonathan Timbo Jallo. Now, I must tell you that last name happens to be my grandson.
Hmm.
But in fact, he was out with me. We have been on every trail, and Jonathan was there, and he took 2 of the pictures.
Hmm.
He actually took the picture because I'm in one of them. You might think of Where's Waldo? Look for me in the book. Jonathan took the picture and another one adjacent to it.
So finally, Frank Preston's dream came to reality.
Yes.
I'm sure eventually, even though the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy people started buying up land, and by the way, they didn't steal people's property. They paid them for it.
They paid.
They bought the property, and then various parcels were cobbled together, and finally we had enough land for this, first of all, the lake, and then the park. I think most people around here know that the name Moraine State Park comes from the terminal moraine, mm-hmm. which was the southernmost point of the glacier,
yes.
during the most recent ice age. It was the most recent ice age, right?
It would be the most recent, mm-hmm. but we had the third and the fourth glaciers both came to this area. Not too much known about the first two because the third and fourth obliterated it.
Yeah, when the glacier advances southward, it pushes rocks, boulders, trees, junk. I mean, it's like a giant bulldozer, really, but a living bulldozer. And when the glacier reached its southern point, its southern terminus, it never went any further south. Then it starts to melt away, mm-hmm. go back to the north, and what you have left is all the detritus that was being pushed by the glacier, the rocks, the soil, everything else, and that's called terminal moraine, right?
Not only did it leave all of that, but the glacier blocked those north-flowing streams. Slippery Rock Creek used to flow north.
Get out, really?
Weirdly. Huh. Wolf Creek used to flow north. Muddy Creek used to flow north. And so they're trying to flow north. Here comes the glacier. That's where the glacial lakes came from. So now we've got an extensive amount of water, extensive. Lake Watts, which is the much larger Lake Arthur, Lake Edmund, which would have covered Harrisville, Slippery Rock, Grove City, a much larger area. As this glacier is receding, this water is released. And that water being released suddenly formed the Slippery Rock Gorge. But that's going to be in the next book.
That's right, because that flows right through the middle of McConnell's Mill.
And I will definitely be dealing a lot more with the glacial effect and how those all came to be in the next book.
You've mentioned a couple of times the name, actually you mentioned several names that people would recognize. There was an Eisler, I forget the...
John Eisler, yes.
Everybody would know that name around here. You mentioned Otto Jennings. That's O-T-T-O, the man's name, Otto Jennings. And if you're thinking Jennings Environmental Education Center,
yes.
Yeah, that's him.
That's
named
him.
After him. What about Lake Arthur? Where the heck did that name come from?
That name came from Edmund Watts Arthur. Now, Edmund Watts Arthur was a lawyer from Pittsburgh. When he was in his 20s, he acquired tuberculosis. So after a year in a sanatorium, his doctor said, you need to be outdoors more. So he started in his legal work handling coal leases. So that takes him outdoors more.
Mm-hmm.
He's now handling these coal mines and so forth in this area. He's also interested in geology. He's also exploring the same area.
That Frank Preston is.
But the two didn't know each other. They didn't meet until 1946.
Hmm.
Then they start exploring together. They put their ideas together, and they were both thinking about this glacial lake. Frank Preston was wanting to recreate it. Edmund Watts Arthur had also thought that Portersville Station would be an ideal place. He arrived at that idea independently from Preston, but now you've got these two powerhouses putting their ideas together. Sadly, 1948, Edmund Watts Arthur died. Dropped dead of a heart attack outside his law office in Pittsburgh. So it was about 2 weeks after that, the passing of Edmund Watts Arthur, that Frank Preston calls John Eisler and calls Jennings and calls these other people together to talk about the lake. And they had wanted to name something in honor of Edmund Watts Arthur. At first it was going to be a trail. Let's do better than the trail. That's where the name Arthur comes from.
Wow.
Edmund Watts Arthur, his very good friend. Now, Edmund Watts Arthur had a geologic hammer that he used in his work. When he died, it was presented to Frank Preston. And there was the story about Excalibur. with King Arthur and Excalibur. So he had engraved on it Excalibur. And at the dedication ceremony on May 23rd, 1970, Frank Preston presents this geologic hammer to Paul Feathers, who was the park manager in charge during the time of the construction. And the instructions were, row out to the middle of the lake sometime. Throw that hammer into the lake. Throw Excalibur back into the lake to return Excalibur back to Arthur. So they were very big on the story from England. And that's where that comes from.
Folks, these stories are so incredible. It's in the book, Moraine State Park,
yes,
for goodness sakes, with pictures, tons of them. Our time runs very short here, and I haven't asked you about a timeline here. I don't want specific dates, November 16th or whatever, but Frank Preston and the others started dreaming about this. It would have been in the 40s, I guess.
In the late 1940s. Uh-huh. And it... in the mid-1960s, work was really getting underway. Plans, moving 422, moving the plan for 79, new bridge for 528, getting all that land acquired. And they started filling the lake in 1969 on May 15th. They closed the gate.
How long did it take to fill it after they closed the sluice gate on the dam?
11 months.
Wow. Not very long, actually.
No, they thought it would take longer. There were people who thought it would never happen. But in fact, it did. 11 months to fill. Dedication was May 23rd, 1970.
Wow. Wow. And it still doesn't cost anything to get in.
It is free.
Absolutely.
Our state
free.
Parks are free. If you register for a program that might have consumable materials, you might have to pay for a specific program for something, but to use the park to take advantage of all of its recreational opportunities, that's free.
I have kept you longer than I promised, but I wanted to talk about the book, the park, Frank Preston, the whole process you went through of 'cause this is your first book.
Yes.
Right? You're a retired teacher, so, you know, we know where you're coming from here, but still, your first one. Just to chat. I wanted to chat about your mom, too. And I really, really enjoyed having you here. I really did.
Thank you so much. And a special hello to all of her listeners who remember her from this station.
Again, your book is available. The title is Moraine State Park. Easy enough.
Easy enough.
Arcadia Publishers. And it's available in a lot of local places around here. Polly, you want to run through that list again for me?
Nicolette's in Portersville. Superstyles in Harmony. It will be available at the Owlet Gift Shop at Moraine. It will be available at the Jennings Gift Shop if it's not there already. You can also get it online at Arcadia Publishing, at Amazon.com, and at Target.com.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
And if you don't come back when you publish the next one on McConnell's Mill, I'm going to be mad.
2 years. 2 to 3 years, I will be here for that book.
Count on it. Thanks, Polly.
Thank you so much.
More to come on It's Your Turn. Stick around. We have a few messages, and we're going to be talking about Honor Flight Pittsburgh. A couple of guests will be here, George Pry, Judy Novak. Stick around. More to come here on It's Your Turn on this Holy Thursday, Maundy Thursday. We'll be back.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way, getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus,
we're going your way.
Of course my kid's in the right car seat. Well, I think he is.
Yeah, my kid's in a booster seat. He was ready to move up. He is ready, right?
Her car seat looks like the right size.
There are probably rules on when to move up to a booster seat, aren't there?
Rear-facing, forward-facing? I think I have it right.
Car crashes are a leading killer of children 1 to 13. Are your children in the right car seat for their age and size? Don't think you know. Know you know. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat.
I know my child's in the right car seat, or else I wouldn't get in the driver's seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Pennsylvania's child protection laws have changed to help us better protect our children. Pennsylvanians who work or volunteer with children may need to get their child abuse clearances. Many of you know who you are, yet there are many of you who don't. You may be a Little League coach. You may be a nonprofit employee mentoring youth. You may be a student teacher. If you're not sure, there's an easy way to find out. First, go to this website, keepkidssafe.pa.gov. Second, find out if you need clearances. Then, apply online. Getting clearances is easier and less expensive than ever. Pennsylvania means business when it comes to protecting our children, and obtaining clearances is one way to ensure their protection. We need to take this seriously. So do your part. Find out if you need your child abuse clearances at keepkidssafe.pa.gov.
Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, Governor. Paid for with Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars.
Welcome back, friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. Well, I was looking forward to talking with Polly Shaw a great deal. I'm certainly looking forward to talking to our next guests here on the program today. They are two. They're with us here in the studio to talk about Honor Flight Pittsburgh. Let's say hello, first of all, to George Pry. George, nice to have you here today.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Also with us is Judy Novak. Judy, nice to have you here as well.
Thanks. Thanks for having us. Mm-hmm.
It's N-O-V-A-K, if I got that spelled correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us, George Pry, what is Honor Flight? What's this organization all about?
We're a local hub of a national organization. Our mission with Honor Flight is to recognize our American war veterans for their sacrifices and achievements by taking them down to Washington, D.C., so that they can see their national memorials, and we do it at no cost to the veterans.
Mm-hmm. And you do this on a periodic basis?
We try and do at least one trip in the spring and one in the fall. Mm-hmm. We started it last fall. And the national organization has been in existence since 2005. And across the country, there's thousands and thousands of veterans that are taken down each year.
So how did you decide to start this here locally, Judy? Were you in the vanguard, you and George? Were you the guys who spearheaded this project?
No, I'm not the spearhead. Actually, George was a spearhead. I think he contacted me because I've always had a real patriotic side. And so George contacted me and said, hey, I see you post all these things, usually on Facebook, and said, hey, I'm starting this organization. Are you interested in joining this with me? And being that I'm a veteran, being that I had an uncle and a grandfather, both World War II veterans, I said yes immediately. My uncle, in fact, actually went on an honor flight 7 years ago out of New Hampshire. And hearing his stories about the day that was spent in D.C. and seeing the memorials and having that time with his brothers, it really impacted him. It was a day he tells me still he'll never forget. So when George said, I'm going to start this, I said, absolutely. So I knew about the organization itself. So I knew it was a good thing for Western Pennsylvania.
Well, fortunately, we're close enough to the nation's capital that we don't have to fly, right?
Yeah. It's about the same amount of time when you count going to an airport and going through security, et cetera. So we kind of laugh that we're a flightless hub. We take a chartered bus, a deluxe motor coach from a local group here called Campbell's Bus Company, and we drive down to we leave early in the morning and drive down, spend the day, and return back later in the evening.
Especially for older veterans, this would be a much less troublesome trip. I mean, to fly these days is, sometimes you wonder whether it's worth it.
Right.
By the time you go through all of the TSA requirements on both ends, and then you're at an airport and you're going to get into, in this case, downtown D.C., why not take a big deluxe motor coach and
eliminate some of those hassles?
Yeah, and eliminate a lot of them, as a matter of fact.
A little less stress on everyone this way.
Why I was particularly interested in this, it just bugged me no end. I guess it was 8-10 years ago. I don't remember the exact timeline. Whenever they were still arguing about the World War II memorial. First of all, where is it going to be in Washington, D.C.? They hacked that around for a few years.
Oh, yeah.
And then what's it going to be? What's going to be the design? Now, this followed some controversy, as I'm sure, Judy, you would be aware of, over the Vietnam Wall.
Right.
If you remember, when that design was first announced, people were up in arms.
Right.
I thought, well, this is an outrage. This doesn't look anything like the Washington Monument or the Lincoln Memorial. It's a wall. Now it's become one of the most beloved monuments in Washington.
Treasured.
Yeah, it's treasured by those who fought there and who served there. So it was not surprising that they started to argue over the World War II. But then it went back and forth. Congress was approving this, disapproving that. And I'm saying, build the darn thing or all the World War II veterans are going to be gone.
Right. And that's the thing. My grandfather never had the opportunity to see the memorial that was erected in his honor.
Mm-hmm.
He passed before it was built, and that's sad. And that's our goal, is to try to get as many World War II veterans on the trip and down there, because time is of the essence right now to try to get them.
God
to,
bless
to
them.
See
God love them. They're in their 90s now. Those are them that are still with us. Unless they really, really lied.
Right.
And some of them did cheat by a couple of years.
Right,
but even then, you know.
Not unusual.
Long, 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 long time ago. So is this restricted to George to just World War II veterans?
No. As you mentioned, unfortunately, the World War II veterans are getting up in age, so we've extended it now to the Korean War veterans, as well as Vietnam veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So what we look for are veterans that were on active duty during those conflicts. And we will bump somebody to make sure a more senior veteran is there. So we always prioritize the World War II veterans first and foremost on every trip, and then only once we've exhausted all of those.
Well, hey, for most of them, it's going to be the last time. So, let's make room for them. That only makes
sense.
How much does it cost for these veterans to take this trip?
Well, due to a lot of support from our community, from members in the community, businesses, et cetera, the cost to a veteran is absolutely nothing. We make sure that their coffees are paid for if they want a coffee, to every bit of the trip. The idea is, if they bring money with them, the only thing they're allowed to do is buy a memento if they want. But we do our best to make sure that all monies come from the donations we've received.
Wonderful, wonderful thing. Really, really amazing.
I tell the guardians in the morning before we board our bus, I say, they served us, so today is your day to serve them.
It is quite possible for some, maybe many of the World War II veterans, that they would need somebody to go with them. Are you able to do that?
Yeah, and we have volunteers in a lot of capacities. One of the capacities, a guardian. We wouldn't be successful without the support of our guardians. What they are, they play a significant role on every trip, ensuring that every veteran has a safe, enjoyable trip. For people that need wheelchairs, there would be one guardian that's just assigned to them to make sure that they can assist them around. We have some nursing staff on every trip. We make sure there's a minimum of two nurses on every trip in case there's an issue.
Wow.
And in regard to the guardians and the nurses, everybody on that trip that is not being a recognized veteran pays their own way. They pay the full cost of the trip. So what amazes me is I have a huge list of guardians, people willing to pay to spend that day with an honored veteran.
So you're just getting the local group started here, right? We started last year,
you say? Yes, our first trip was last October.
Mm-hmm. Are there future ones scheduled in the near-term future?
We have one scheduled here April 29th. It is a full trip for this one. And then we plan to have more in the fall, probably in October.
Is it too soon for people who are hearing about this as we speak today to, get in touch with you and say, hey, I'd like to go, or I'd like my father to go, or my grandfather?
Absolutely not. We'd love to have people contacting us at all times. We do have a little bit of a waiting list right now for guardians. As I said, we've got more people volunteering to help than I ever expected. So we have a waiting list with guardians. But, in regard to the veterans, if you're a World War II veteran, you're going to get bumped onto this trip if possible. And, a Korean veteran may get bumped up. But, at the end of the day, we're going to continually take applications, and if we need to add second bus, third bus, fourth bus, we'll do that to get as many people there as quickly as we can.
How do people get in touch with you?
Well, we have a website. Mm-hmm. We have a phone number, and we can call a phone number. You want to give your number out?
724-355-3737. Or our website
is www.honorflightpittsburgh.org. And all the information that you would be looking for as far as our upcoming trips, there's a photo gallery up there now on our website that you can see pictures from the previous trip we had with our veterans. Get an idea of what we are about as far as an organization. We also take donations on our website, too. So that helps to fund trips for other veterans who may want to come with us in the future.
I was going to ask you, how do you pay for all this? I mean, this is not like we're going from Seattle to Washington, but by the same token, it's a 4 or 5 hour trip down there.
Well, we've had some of the local VFWs and American Legion Post in Western Pennsylvania send us donations. Our guardians, like I said, they pay for their own trips. Mm-hmm. So, at least there's no cost going for anybody but a veteran. And, it amazes me the number of people that just send in a check for $10, $25, whatever they can.
Right.
But the vast majority of our funding comes from individuals that just want to say thanks.
I need to check with my producer here. Do I need to take another break, or can we wait till we have the lottery numbers and we just need one? Okay, we'll wait a few minutes then, okay? Good. Okay, sorry, I got a little behind schedule there. I'm just so interested in this. This is such a wonderful, wonderful program. Have you had any feedback from the first trip that went down last fall? Anybody shaking your hand or saying this was pretty neat or anything like that?
We actually, what gets my heart the most is some of the veterans that came with us on our very first trip when we were just kind of, we were not sure how it was going to go, to be honest. So being our first trip, and it was amazing to me when we got back how many of the veterans that came with us wanted to come back this time as guardians. Mm. They want to escort
other
veterans. They want to share that experience with them. So that, I think, says a lot about the hard work and the time that we put in to it, because they keep coming back. So that's fantastic. So,
are these, I assume you're concentrating on three memorials, the World War II Memorial, Korean War Memorial, and the Vietnam War Memorial, right? The Vietnam Wall?
Yes. But through our day, we start our day at Arlington, pay respect for those that have passed before, and watch the changing of the guard. We try to visit multiple other memorials, like the U.S. Marine Memorial, which most people refer to as the Iwo Jima Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
We
is that in D.C., by the way? Because there's copies of that in a few places.
It's right there. It's actually, I think, the physical address is Virginia, but it's right across the river.
Yeah, it's right beside Arlington.
Yes, that's right. The real one is. Okay.
Yep.
I was confused because there's a slightly smaller reproduction at Quantico.
Right.
The entrance to the Marine base there. So excuse me for being confused.
That's okay. So we visit that. We stop up at the U.S. Air Force Memorial for lunch. Have lunch there. It's a relatively new memorial. And then drive around the city and try our best to hit other ones like the Navy Memorial if time allows.
Mm-hmm.
And to make sure that we have more time this year or this trip, I guess the best way is enlisted the help of the Capitol Police. So they will escort our trip around to make sure that we can get around the city quickly. And
it's a really good idea, by the way.
Right.
If you've ever tried to drive in or through or around Washington, it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing that I think people around here could help us with would be to greet our veterans. When we come back on the 29th, it'll be around 10:45 p.m. We're leaving and returning at the UPMC Memorial.
I brought you something.
down by Cranberry. And the Penguin organization has been phenomenal in letting us use their facility. So we will be coming back in and hoping to greet our veterans.
That's a Saturday. I was just checking my calendar here. The 29th is a Saturday. So if people want to welcome them when they come back, it would be at the UPMC Lemieux Center?
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Down in Cranberry. Well, you can't miss that, that's for sure.
That's right.
Everybody, even if you don't know where it is, it's the biggest thing that's down there. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing. Were either of you or both of you able to go on that initial trip?
Yeah, we both went on the first trip. We'll both be on this one. And as she said, most of our veterans from the last time have contacted us and asked how to get involved. So one of them's a physician's assistant. He'll be going on a trip with us to provide medical help. Another one's going to be our full-time photographer to make sure we can capture all the moments we can and share them with others, as well as last year we provided, Judy did a lot of photography work for us and provided a disc to all the veterans so they don't have to worry about running around trying to find cameras and get the right shots that wouldn't necessarily include them if they were taking the picture. So in this situation, we have one of those vets coming back again to help us out and try and make sure he can capture a lot of moments for people.
Wow. You're taking care of these. At this era, it was mostly guys. And it's different today. You know, we have women
That's
in
right.
combat today,
That's
but
right.
we didn't back in those wars.
Well, and as you mentioned, at this trip, we'll have our first female veteran attending with us. She was
Good.
A veteran in Vietnam, and she'll be attending with us here on the 29th.
Good. Good for her. I think this idea of welcoming them back home, too, is just fantastic, incredible.
Because a lot of them didn't get that.
Especially
Vietnam veterans did not get the welcome home they deserved.
Not only did they not get a welcome home, they got just the opposite.
Right,
in some
absolutely.
Cases, yeah.
So, yeah, we make sure that they get what they've deserved and they've earned that welcome home and that honor. So,
I have to imagine that this can get pretty emotional for a lot of these veterans going down there. It would have to be.
It would kind of like tear up and you always say, oh, it's just my allergies.
Yeah, a lot of them tend to want to be strong, and understandably so. But
it's not a question of being strong. I had the great honor of visiting some of the World War II sites in Normandy some years ago. You know, I stood on Omaha Beach. I stood on Utah Beach. I stood at the American Cemetery above Omaha Beach, where literally, as far as you can see, it's just white crosses and stars of David.
Right.
I cried like a baby. I don't know how you couldn't. It's an incredibly emotional experience. I would expect them to.
It is.
It's not unmanly to do that.
It is. Yeah. Huh? I think a lot of them think that. So that's why this trip is different than if our veterans were going with their family, because they're going with their brothers that understand, you know. So I think it releases something for them. It's a good closure.
Have you ever seen the ending to the Tom Hanks film? What is it about the missing
Saving
soldier?
Private Ryan.
Yeah, Saving Private Ryan, which is fictional. There was a similar situation with some brothers, but there wasn't actually a Private Ryan, but that film ends at the cemetery above Omaha Beach, by the way, with a couple of veterans there, and yes, they're crying. Why wouldn't they, for goodness sakes?
Right.
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah,
that's a wonderful thing you're doing here. We need to take a break, though. We'll be back and talk a little bit more about this with our guests, George and Judy, but break time here on the It's Your Turn program for a Thursday. So we'll be back and wrap up with our guests right after these words.
People's Natural Gas Eat, Drink, Help program
Okay?
is committed to helping local businesses and organizations in our community. Visit Goodfellas Pizza in Zillianople and People's will donate $1 for each pizza ordered to Zillianople's Community Park. Check out their program at peoplesgas.com.
truck drivers. Schneider, an industry leader since 1935, is now hiring drivers throughout Pennsylvania. Opportunities are available in our van truckload, dedicated, tanker, and intermodal divisions. That means a huge variety of driving positions right in your backyard. Enter your zip code at schneiderjobs.com to find all the opportunities near you, many with limited time sign-on bonuses. Aren't you curious what's available in Pennsylvania? Again, search your zip code and apply at schneiderjobs.com. That's schneiderjobs.com.
Taking a look at your midday lottery numbers for this Thursday, April 13th of 2017. The pick 200 with a wild number of 1. The pick 3444 with a wild number of 1. The pick 4475, wild number of 1. The pick 561033 with a wild number of 1. And the treasure hunt, 10, 14, 15, 16, and 30. That was a look at your midday lottery numbers here for this Thursday, April 13th of 2017. And they are brought to you by New Haven Court at Clearview.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
Not an uncommon.
It's just one of those things, you're just doing your duty, just what you were called to do.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking about this wonderful program under the auspices of Honor Flight Pittsburgh. Their mission, through generous donations, is to recognize American war veterans for their sacrifices and their achievements by transporting them via deluxe motor coach to Washington, D.C., to visit those memorials dedicated to honor the service and sacrifices that they've made and that they've made on behalf of their friends. I've seen pictures of, particularly Vietnam, where vets will go to the wall and put their finger in the engraving of a buddy who died there, or someone that they knew who died there. So it's not just them. It's the others who didn't come back. This is, as George Prime was telling us, this is actually a national program, and you're just getting it started here in our immediate area last year, actually. You made your first trip, huh?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It started by a doctor out in Springfield, Ohio. Basically, he was asking people, as you discussed the World War II Memorial, it was one of the most recent ones built and open to the public, and he was discussing with his patients about the memorial and asking if they'd have a chance to go down and see it. A lot of them said they wanted to, but as the year went on and he kept asking them, hey, did you get there? Very few of them had the opportunity. Most of them didn't. Mm-hmm. So he got a couple of his buddies together that all owned or flew small planes and took about 12 of them down on the first trip back in 2005. And then by the fall of 2005, he had a humongous waiting list, just people left and right asking, you know, how to get involved. So they eventually partnered with another group called Honor Air down in North Carolina, and now it's a national organization with, I think, at least 44 states are currently have an active group.
Mm. Well, it's not only the act of going down there, it's physically how to do it. Now, obviously, World War II veterans, if they're still with us, God bless them, in their 90s, they're not going to be capable of doing this themselves. But hey, folks, Korean War, many times referred to as the Forgotten War,
right,
never officially declared by Congress. Ask anybody who was there whether it was a war or not, or was it just an unarmed conflict? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even Vietnam veterans, look, those men and women now are in their 60s and 70s. And to the very thought of driving to Washington, okay, I can get there. It's interstate highways. But once where am I going? How do I get to Arlington? How do I get to the mall? That's beyond the, I don't care how old you are, that's beyond the capability of most folks. To be able to have a bus to go there, take you where you need to go, and so on and so forth. That's the way you got to do it, right? Because otherwise, it's like you said, George, they're never going to do it.
Yeah, and that's our biggest fear, and you know, we want to make sure that that's not the case. We want to get everyone there. You know, and I think Will Rogers is the one that said it best. We can't all be heroes. Some of us have to stand on the curb and clap as they go by. And in a sense, this is our way of doing that. You know, we're not necessarily just standing here clapping. We're finding a way to get them there, to get them to see their memorials, get them to see, you know, their other brothers and sisters that have been involved in other conflicts. It's an amazing trip and overwhelming as far as an emotional experience for them.
And this may open up for a lot of veterans who, it's been my experience. It's anecdotal, of course. Everybody's different, but there's so many guys that I've talked to who held a lot of stuff in for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Not on purpose. It wasn't something they planned to do, but it was just, you know, they couldn't find themselves to be able to talk about it. Sometimes that's a little bit different when you're with your brothers, and maybe you're on a trip like this.
Right.
There's really the opportunity to, you know, release some of these feelings that maybe you've been holding back on.
Yeah, I think our trip in October, I think we had a lot of vets comparing stories and talking to each other. They, you know, they didn't necessarily know each other when they met in the morning and got on the bus. But, yeah, stories were shared all through the day. And at the end of the day, it's almost like we all became the best of friends. So getting off the bus, and it was a lot of hugs, and we're going to stay in contact. And we do. I think George and I both do. We keep in contact with the vets that came with us the first time. And it is. It's like you do form a bond in the period of one day. It's amazing. So,
Judy, you're a veteran, right?
Yes, I'm a Navy veteran.
What branch of the service were you in?
The Navy.
The Navy?
Yes.
You have on a red blouse there. I thought, you know, that's Marine regalia there. I never meet a Marine in a situation like this that they're not wearing a red shirt or a red jacket, you know. Navy, huh?
Worked alongside a lot of Marines. We actually go to a lot of the same schools, serve on the same ships. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, they're loosely actually.
Yeah, we're in the same department, basically.
Don't want to tell a Navy person
you're
a Marine.
Department of the Navy.
That's
right. All I'm going to say. Yeah.
Don't tell a Marine that, though. But hey, listen, if you don't believe us, NCIS, right? Jethro?
That's right.
That's right. It's Marines and the Navy are kind of tied together, joined at the hip there, so to speak. I want to go over the contact information.
Right,
I'm sure that a lot of people are hearing about this for the first time today, and that was why we came together to do this.
Well, not to interrupt you, but you mentioned NCIS. I don't know if anyone is a big fan of NCIS like myself. But the Honor Flight Network was part of an episode on NCIS.
Really?
March 28th. Yes. Yes. So it was fantastic. It was nice. It was nice to recognize the organization that way in a show that's so popular.
Well,
so,
you know, Jethro wears shirts that people send him. I've been reading about this.
Really?
Yeah. Because I saw him one time. He had a Penn State sweatshirt on when he was down in the basement working on his boat.
How about that?
And, people send him shirts, and he sometimes wears them. You know,
We should send him an Honor Flight Pittsburgh shirt.
Maybe.
Maybe we'll show up on an episode sometime.
I did not see that. Was that just this year that it was on?
Yeah, it was just 2 weeks ago.
I have an embarrassing confession to make. I enjoy that show. In fact, I think it's one of the best couple of shows on TV.
I agree.
But I never watch the first runs. I watch it when it's on TBS. They show them three
it's
in a row.
Miracle of having cable. You can go back whenever you have time and put it on. Yeah,
I can watch it on my schedule and not on the network schedule. Well, anyway, contact information, either veterans that are listening or, in some cases, families, particularly World War II veterans, family members who are hearing this and think this might be valuable for their loved one. How do they hook up with you in terms of maybe being available to go on the next trip? Not the one coming up at the end of the month. That's a full boat already. But the one later in the year, how do they get in touch with you? Phone number, first of all, George?
Yeah, the easiest ways are our phone number, which is 724-355-3737, or you can get on our website, which is honorflightpittsburgh.org, and on there you would even have the applications available so that you could download them, print them out, and fill them out for us.
That's the way to go. By the way, I have to ask, because I was jotting this down as you were speaking, And I always write Pittsburgh as PGH whenever I'm in a hurry. But you got to spell it out, right? It's the whole.
Yes, it's all spelled out. No
Pittsburgh.
Abbreviations.
Okay, I'm glad I noted that, or I would have wondered. I'm sure, though, if you put Honor Flight abbreviation Pittsburgh, you'd eventually get there somehow. but it's Honor Flight Pittsburgh spelled out.
Yes.
.org.
Yep.
Okay.
And we also have a Facebook page if someone was interested in liking the group there. We keep that up to date. Mm-hmm. Judy does a great job of always keeping it up to date with what's going on, including local fundraising events mm-hmm. and our trips themselves.
And if anybody wants to make a donation, however small or large, welcome.
Absolutely. And again, the website has our address to mail a donation if you want it, or there's a little link that you can click and do it directly through the website.
Thanks for being here today to talk about this. This is a great thing that you've done, actually, and you're doing. You started it last year, continuing to do it. It's a marvelous thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and thanks for inviting us on to talk about it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Happy to do it. That's one of the things we try to do here on this program. We thank our guests today, certainly George and Judy with us here.